Fine. So I started talking about this yesterday, but now let's flesh it out. So to me, one of the most striking things about the story is what you don't get. Okay? So we read part of it yesterday. What's strikingly missing from all of Paraklamet Zion? Right, the discussion of the sale of Yosef.
What's missing?
Yes. We read it yesterday. What's missing is Yosef. Right? Yosef is thrown in the pit, and then you hear nothing from Yosef. Right? You hear nothing from Yosef. Right? So now, why do you hear nothing from Yosef? Right, so you say he's hearing sold, right? And so maybe he didn't say anything, right? He's powerless. Is that true? Does he not say anything? So we know it's not true. That's the problem. How do we know it's not true? Because in next week's parsha, right? In next week's parsha, when the viceroy of Egypt is accusing the brothers of all the terrible things and throwing them in jail, what does Reuven say to the brothers? Right, they say to each other, "Vayomru ish alachiv, avala shenem anachnu alachinu shereinu tzarat nafsho behitchanenu elenu velo shamanu, alkein ba elenu atzara hazot." They said, "It's our fault because we didn't listen to him when he was crying to us." Right, right, right. Like I said, this is one of my favorite things. Is because the Torah gives us information in a flashback. It doesn't say it in Breishit Lamed Zion when he's being sold. But later on, you find out that he was crying and they ignored him. Right? So obviously a lot of the Mefarshim try to figure out, okay, why was he crying? What exactly was he pleading for? Right? Was it that because he thought that he didn't deserve this, right? Or it was because, you know, simply that's what you do, right? If you are being sold into slavery, right? Or these are his brothers, or right, whatever, right? But the bigger question I want to deal with is what, right? This happens several times in the Torah. What is the import of only telling us this in a flashback, right? Why not tell it to us when it's happening? So the Ramban gives three answers. The Ramban says possibly one, it's because it was obvious, right? Like you can just assume, right? The second he says, which is very interesting, is that the Torah wanted to minimize the disgrace of the brothers, right? And the third is just sometimes the Torah does that, which doesn't really explain it, which is sometimes the Torah is, right, is brief in one place and elaborates elsewhere. Okay, but that really doesn't answer the question, because you still have to ask, why does it do that? So the only one where he really suggests an answer, right, is the second one. But what does it mean? So here I'll give you a few answers. So Nechama Leibovich says as follows. She says, the narrative of the sale of Joseph is careful not to lay the blame for what happened either on Joseph or his brethren in any one-sided manner. Both sides were equally culpable, and the Torah does not cover up their evil doing. Joseph was a talebearer, boastful in his retelling of the dream to his father, and his brothers hated and envied him for it. If the Torah had dwelt on this occasion, on Joseph's pleas for mercy and the brothers' stone-heartedness, it would have upset the balance and undermined the impartiality of the narrative, weighing the odds against them and painting them in too black a light. On this occasion, the text therefore did not enlarge on their misconduct. Later on, however, the allusion to Joseph's pleas for mercy only served to underline their remorse rather than their cruelty. Right. So Nechama Leibovich's argument is that the story is complicated. His brothers did something terrible, but Yosef wasn't exactly great either. And it's you know how we have this thing to go for the underdog, right? If you right at the beginning heard that Yosef was crying and screaming to his brothers and they didn't listen, right? You forget, right? You're going to feel terrible and you're going to forget the fact that this is a complicated story, that Yosef's brothers are really wrong, but Yosef wasn't perfect. Right? So what the Torah does is it slightly softens it. It highlights Yosef's sins. It tells you what they did, which is terrible. It does tell you that he was crying and screaming and they ignored him, but only when you find out that they're regretting it and they're doing tshuva. So you find the whole story, but in a way that forces you to balance, right? Because at the beginning, you hear that Yosef did something wrong, you hear that the brothers do something wrong, but you don't over-dramatize how cruel they're being, right? Until they're doing tshuva, which already complicates the story, right? So Nechama Leibovitz's answer is that we hide that in order to allow you in the moment, right, to basically say the brothers are terrible, Yosef isn't great, right? And feel that, where if you spent a lot of time in that part of the story saying, and Yosef was screaming, please, please, you know, we used to read stories together, like, right, you lose all, right, perspective in the story. So that's Nechama Leibovitz's answer, right? And, you know, at some point, right, I noted that this is actually a very important psychological thing, right? One of the psychological heuristics that modern psychologists talk about a lot are things like the halo effect or the devil effect. Now, what's the halo effect or the devil effect? What? It's called a heuristic, right? What it means is as follows. Often people have a bias that the first thing they know about a person colors everything they do later. So if you like someone, right, and you know that they're good, then even when they do something which is questionable, you read it in a good light. And if you don't like them, right, so here you always have this danger, because it's not that they weren't doing something wrong, but if you made them, right, if you really, really, really make the brothers look even, right, really, really bad at the beginning, then you're going to be incapable of seeing the other side and see them change later on, right? So by withholding it, it just allows you to read the story without, right? Rabbi Daniel Feldman has this fascinating argument that part of the reason Lashon Hara is usur, even when it's true, is because every true thing is really false. Why? Not because it's false. Because what happens? Let's say you don't know somebody, and the first thing you find out about them is that I tell you something true about them. The next time you see them doing something good, it's going to be colored. Exactly. So he argues that the problem with Lashon Hara isn't, you would say, well, it's true. But the answer is nothing's ever really true. Because if this is the first exposure I have to someone, right, then yes, this particular thing, this detail, this fact is true. But the impact that it has on the way I perceive them in the future is false, right? And there's always that danger, right? So that's Nechama Leibovitz's argument. She quotes a second one from Meir Weiss, which I think is really fascinating, is no. The reason the Torah tells you this way is so that you experience the awakening of the brother's conscience with them, right? Meaning, you read the story as the brothers experience it, right? Because in this point, the fact that the Torah doesn't mention it is because the brothers were so callous, right? This is like the opposite, that you read it the way they did, is that he was screaming and the brothers didn't hear it, so you don't hear it either. And you hear it as their conscience awakens and they say, oi, what did we do? You hear it with them, right? It's like retroactively, they hear it for the first time as they're doing tshuva, right? In their flashback, they're like, oh, we really should have listened to him, but we didn't then, right? We heard it, but we didn't hear it. And now you hear it for the first time when the brothers do, right? So possibility one is it's trying to, right, minimize the guilt of the brothers. Possibility two is no, it's making you experience the story with the brothers, right, and experience their awakening of conscience now. So, as he says, right, it's meant to reveal what is going on in the consciousness of the brothers at that moment, indicating their remorse. Rabbi Alex Israel, right, develops it a little bit, right, and he says it's now at this moment the brothers hear Joseph's cries for the first time. This is the moment those cries sink in. This is the moment that they penetrate beyond the cold outer surface of indifference. The Torah reports Joseph's impassioned pleas here because it is this moment and not before the message is received. Now they are sorry. At the time, they were deaf, distant. We might suggest that this observation connects with the textual highlighting of the phrase, Vayaker Vayinaker. Right? What does one recognize and what does one choose to ignore? When one is deaf, when is one deaf and when does the sound penetrate? The whole notion of recognition is as much psychological as it is related to the senses. We decide what to hear, what to be sensitive to, who to be good to, and who to hate. Right? So this is right what he argues is going on. Right? So I think, but Right, for me, this is just a fascinating story because what it highlights is that the Torah, right, tells you the stories in the way it does for a reason, right? The way I did it once when I did it in Olpana was I showed them pictures, right? There are biblical pictures that people have painted, right? And if you look, I also know this is one of the benefits of the Torah being a book and not like a picture book, because you can't do this in a picture book, right? Think about the difference in making something from a book into a movie. Flashbacks are much harder in a movie because you're seeing the scene. In a book, we can withhold information, right? In a movie, it's hard unless you like
purposefully don't.
Right, right. You purposely like play the movie backwards, right? Which I've never seen it, but apparently that's like how Memento works, right? Have you seen it? I don't know. I haven't seen it. No. But apparently that's how it does, right? It's like someone who has short-term memory loss, whatever, right? Who can't remember anything, right? So the movie, right, takes place backwards, right? Where you see it from his perspective, right? And then at the end, it plays it forward so that you understand what you missed, right? Right? Or something like that. But the benefit of the Torah being a book and not a picture is that it allows you to, right? It allows it to hide things and only tell it to you in a way that makes you experience the story differently, which to me is fascinating, right? I always love going back to this. It's not the only time the Torah does things through flashbooks, but it's definitely, I think, the most powerful time when, it's definitely a very powerful instance of the Torah telling you something through flashbacks and changing the way the experience the story, even if the information at the end of the day is the same.